tell us about the contracting force. Are they there as a support entity, or are they performing some more urgent functions?
Well, that's a great question, because actually they perform many, many different functions. And it's useful to remember that historically the military has always relied on contractors. I think the big change in the last decade or so is the percentage and the ratio, if you will. It's been true in Iraq almost since 2004 that contractors have been equal to or outnumbered the military, and the same is now true in Afghanistan. So it's not so much the ratio as it is what the trend is and how we manage them. They perform a whole host of functions, and a lot of the media attention focuses on a fairly small group, which is those who carry guns and provide security. That ends up, our analysis shows, that's roughly about 8 to 10% of the total dollars spent over the last 6 years.
Well, one of the reasons possibly for the people doing security increasing is that by policy, the United States is increasing the number of diplomatic people in these zones, and this is something that dates back to, I think, the late years of the Bush administration. So is that one of the reasons that's causing more contractors to be employed there?
It is one of the reasons, and it gets back to a more fundamental question, which is, for what do we use contractors? We tend to make these decisions as a government on a case-by-case, program-by-program basis. There really is no broad policy framework to guide either the Defense Department or the State Department, or for that matter any other federal agency, on how to make decisions on when to use contractors. They're made based upon need, available supply of both civilian and military personnel who are already on the government payroll, and what your options are. And so that without a broad policy framework, we tend to make the decisions case by case. So as the need arises, you look around, you say, who can do this job? Well, the military is kind of busy right now, and so we tend to move towards contractors.
Well, Mr. Berto, I'm wondering if they're you're going to go through the same process that they went through in Iraq, moving in contractors without enough government procurement professionals and program managers on the ground to sort of oversee all the operations there. Is there any indication of that?
One of the reasons I love this show is because you have such an intelligent listening audience and people who understand these kinds of issues. And as most government employees know, you can't really manage excellence into a contract unless it's written correctly at the front end, defining the requirements, laying out what performance is expected, how you're going to measure and monitor that performance. And that's got to be part of your upfront negotiations. I was part of a commission 2 years ago that looked hard at both Iraq and Afghanistan. And what we found was the vast majority of the problems was the requirements hadn't been gotten right. The contract hadn't been defined up front, and some of the expectations hadn't been documented. That makes it much harder to manage. Having said that, we also have to do a better job of both expanding the capability of the government managers and expanding the number of them. And it's tough in a war zone.
We're talking with David Berto. He's director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And having looked at some parts of that report on Iraq contracting that came out, I guess the interim report is out, and the final report is yet to come out from the commission. Part of the problem is not just the soldiers and the contractors, but the representatives that are non-military from the United States that are there to oversee the contractors on behalf of the military. That piece of force is what was missing in Iraq. Is that still the case in Afghanistan, as far as we know?
There's actually
contractors, technical representatives?
Yeah, there's been significant strides in improving the contracting officers' technical representatives, both in terms of their training and in terms of the assignment of their jobs to them. What we had found a couple of years ago is that for many of these CORs or COTRs, as we call them, this was another duty as assigned, and so there wasn't a lot of thought put into either who you pick for the job or how you vetted them and made sure that they knew what they were doing. There have been significant improvements in that regard, both in terms of training and in terms of measuring performance. But it's a constant struggle to keep up. You have rotations. People come in and out. A new guy comes in. You got to pick up the ball. The contracts tend to be more stable than the personnel are.
And the costs involved in contractors versus military personnel in doing some of this, or even government personnel?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. One is the actual amount you pay the individuals, and in many cases there you'll find that contractors are paid more than their equivalent government person. But the Congressional Budget Office a year and a half ago or so did a pretty thorough assessment of this, and they found that when you fully load the real government cost, the cost of overhead and the cost of retirement, for instance, that the costs are roughly equal. So the real management question is not a question of cost overall. It's a question of how you define the requirements of the contract and how you manage that contract, both during performance and after it's over.
And you also have to make sure that the comportment of the contractors is such that later on you don't have these big hearings and big scandals, because that's really, I think, tainted the whole question, perhaps unfairly, about the use of contractors in the first place.
Well, you're right, Tom, and it doesn't take very many really bad incidences, and certainly the behavior that was reported in the by Pogo last week is abhorrent behavior, and it puts a real smear on America's willingness and visibility to our allies and our host country there, and it takes a long time to undo that. And the kinds of behavior that you can't really regulate back here in the United States, what people do on their own time in their own homes, is obviously not subject to government contract management. But when you're overseas, these folks are living in a government compound. We are essentially responsible for them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think we have both a right and a contractual duty to expect and require better behavior than what we saw here.
And so as we parse down into the report from General McChrystal and the possibility, and I think it's a very sure possibility, that he'll ask for more troops on the ground in Afghanistan, do you think that then bumps up the contracting community as well? It would have to, wouldn't it?
It would have to. I mean, at the logistics end, at the communications end, we made a conscious decision quite a number of years ago to concentrate our military personnel on their combat ability and to the kinds of support that you don't really need a well-trained warfighter to do. We'll use contractors to do that sort of thing. And I think if you deploy more troops, you will be deploying more contractors. Those are not the contractors, though, that I think cause the problems, either in terms of cost or in terms of management or public behavior. They tend to know their jobs well. They've been doing this since Bosnia, and I think that kind of performance is not a grave concern. Probably shouldn't drive the decision. The real decision is, what are we going to have those troops do, and how well are they going to execute the president's strategy?